It's Mary
and Jenny,
and we came into our identities in our 30s.
This is Queerly,
where we do life in community.
Hello, hello.
All right.
Welcome back, Dope Souls.
Welcome back, everybody.
It's so good to be back. Don't you think, Jenny? It's actually amazing that we find time to come together and just talk.
I know.
Yeah.
I love this. I love that I get to talk to you all the time, and now we're just recording it, so.
And we're so grateful for everyone that listens to our episodes, because who knows that, like, wait, what was I trying to say? I mean, we're just so grateful to have everyone listen to us, because you could record an episode and nobody listens. So yeah. We're just happy that all your queer dope souls are part of this journey.
Yes.
So
to start off.
Right.
What has been your joy this week?
You know, it's so interesting, but food is a big deal. It's such a big deal. I got time to cook this week. I made banana bread. Mm. I used my air fryer to make like fries.
Oh, yum.
I made plantains. I made like small plantain chips. Then I made a salad. I made Alfredo fettuccine pasta with chicken. So I didn't eat all that in one round, but I actually got time to cook this past week. And cooking is sort of like a luxury when you have a very busy schedule. And I enjoy homemade food because you get to know what ingredients you're using, and usually it's healthier than what sometimes we eat on the go. And so that brought me a lot of joy, being able to make my own meals and having a scrumptious homemade meal. Yeah, so that was joy for me. But yeah, so Jenny, what about you? What brought you joy this past week?
Oh man, everything that you were mentioning makes me so hungry now.
It's good food. There's some in the fridge. We could always eat later.
That sounds so good. What brought me joy? I talked to my mom today earlier and she sounded really happy. The last time I was on the phone with her, she was really sick.
Oh.
And I had been texting her, like making sure she's okay, but she didn't respond back. So it was really good to hear back from her today. And, you know, she took the day off work and she's going to go hiking. So, yeah, that always brings me joy to hear my mom healthy and happy, because I don't live near her. So, yeah, that always brings me joy.
I'm so glad your mom is okay. But yeah. Your mom is so cool. She's going to go hiking today.
Yeah.
Bro, that is pretty cool. And it's just so that your mom goes, your mom also, she goes like,
stand up
paddleboarding. That is like ultimate cool to me.
Yeah.
So yeah, I really think your mom's so cool, and I'm glad that she's fine, and I'm glad that that brought you joy.
You'll meet her soon.
Oh my God, I can't wait. And she lives in the most awesome place, which I'm not going to mention right now, but she lives in a pretty cool place.
Yes.
Anyway, for those of you that were not able to listen to our past episode, please go listen to it about identities, which is a great segue into what we want to explore a little more today, which is intersectionality and being a queer person of color. Mm-hmm. So queer and POC put together are two intersectionalities, because you're looking at life through the lens of being queer, but also navigating and looking at life through the lens of being a person of color, which most commonly known as POC. And it's so interesting that when Kimberly Crenshaw came up with this term 30 years ago, for those of you that do not know, she's also a Black woman. When she came up with this term about 30 years ago, it was not really welcomed in her circles, but suddenly it took off. And now it is one of the things, or one of the terms that we use to help us include, be like inclusive in the way that we navigate life. Because the way that a Black man and a Black woman navigate life might be extremely different, and the way a white man and a white woman, or an Asian man and an Asian woman navigate life might be very different, and the experiences that a man might have that a woman doesn't have, or experiences that a woman has that a man doesn't have. And so intersectionality has become such a big deal when it comes to social justice, when it comes to inclusivity and the like. And I'm so glad that we're having an opportunity to talk about it today.
Yeah. Yeah, just to talk about it through our experiences and our lenses. And we still are learning a lot too. I personally am still learning a lot. So, and this is something I should have mentioned before in previous episodes, but if there's any feedback that you all have for us, or any learning moments or opportunities, please, please, please feel free to email us or reach out to us and let us know, because we are constantly evolving and learning, and I am here to hold space for that too.
Hallelujah, praise the Lord to us. Anyway, that's okay. joking aside, so, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. For you, Mary, what does intersectionality mean to you, and how does it show up in your life?
So
talk about that.
My personal experience regarding intersectionality, basically, one, I identify as Black, which is considered a minority in the US. And so as a Black person, I'm already navigating a world that was ideally built for white people and white structures. Mm-hmm. I am navigating systemic racism, and I'm also navigating anti-Blackness, which really, to be honest, anti-Blackness is so internalized that many people are not aware that things that they do are anti-Black. For example, yeah. A lot of questions that I would get asked a lot were things like, oh, you speak English so well. That's a very anti-Black sentiment, because you're just assuming because I'm Black, mm-hmm. and I'm not from
and
the
a lot
US.
Of microaggressions.
Yeah, I wasn't born in the US, then that means I cannot speak English. And so I do navigate a lot of systemic racism, which really shows up itself when I'm looking for apartments. Finding housing in the US when you're Black in a good neighborhood is really hard. So yeah, so one intersectionality I navigate is being Black. So the next intersectionality that, and my Blackness in itself is actually, it's got another intersectionality in it. I am a Black person, but I was not born in the US, which means I speak with an accent. So for some reason in the US, when you don't speak with an American accent, everyone thinks you have an accent, and they do not have an accent. But I just need to stress it today that everyone in the entire world has an accent, because yeah. an accent is determined by the geographical location of someone. So if you are in America, you've got an American accent. But even within the American accent, different regions, like someone from California sounds very different from someone from Nebraska. And so they have two different accents. But like my experience navigating as a Black African, of which we all know that like being Black is not a monolith, you know, Black people mm-hmm. are not monolithic. So I also navigate other like hardships by virtue of the fact that I am African who speaks with a Ugandan accent, as compared to a Black person born in the US who speaks with an American accent. So that's just another layer within being Black that I'd kind of not mentioned, but it's difficult when you're trying to break into the professional world. Like immediately people are like, oh, she's daft. Like just by the fact that you're speaking, you know, not English the way they, not like them. And so then from being Black and being African in there, the other intersectionality that I navigate in my life is being queer, of which even if being queer is a new identity, I is a new identity because I just fully came into my identity as a queer woman. But I've had, I've been out for 2 years now. And so being queer, we know, is really a marginalized group in the whole world, because the world is built on mainly, I mean, I don't know if many of you have heard of this, but there's what we call Christian privilege, which is very prevalent in the US. And the common Christianity that we know teaches against homosexuality, and so do so many other, not all faiths, but so many other spiritual practices. have been teaching against homosexuality, but what I've been exposed to mainly were Christian teachings. So you're already navigating a world that hates you, hates who you are, even if you didn't choose to be queer. And on top of that, I think with the current global atmosphere, and especially in the US, we are seeing that they are rolling back a lot of what our queer ancestors fought for. You know, they fought for the privilege to be, you know, have marriage, you know, because that wasn't given to them before. And what today we celebrate joyously, the pride that we celebrate joyously, wasn't always a joyous activity. It came out of riots, you know, riots and riots until we've been recognized. But yeah, so being queer is not easy. We are far from where we started over the past 50 years, but we're not at a point where it's absolutely inclusive on a global scale. So I'm navigating being Black, I'm navigating being queer, and then I'm navigating being a woman. and the thing is, many of us do not realize it, but we live in a very patriarchal society. A society that actually doesn't like women. I know when I say a society that doesn't like women, I seem very radical, but it is the truth. If you look recently, if you follow global news, or if you follow what's happening, like in the US, they just rolled back the opportunity or the right for a woman to choose for her own body, to choose whether she wants to give birth or not. And there's this scary headline about a 10-year-old that had to be flown out of there. Of guys, yeah. 10 years, what was I doing at 10? You know, I was a child.
Yeah.
Imagine a 10-year-old woman, girl, not even woman, being forced to carry a pregnancy to term because of some religious belief. So being, when I say the society doesn't like women, it really doesn't. If we look at like unpaid labor. Unpaid labor in the world is labor that either directly related to looking after children or looking after the home. It is not recognized as labor, but it's so tiring.
Yeah.
That's something that where we don't like women. A lot of a lot of what happens in the medical field, they have not done enough tests on the women's bodies. So we do not have enough, like, let's say, knowledge about things that happen to women, because it's just not important. Like, some of the medication we take hasn't even been tested on women. So that's what I mean by saying that the society does not like the woman. It's not that they don't like the woman, but the woman is sort of like a second-class citizen. We live in a world where you will hear people say that a woman's place is in the kitchen. Now, I have a problem with that statement, because there are women that are way better leaders than men. And there are men that are way better chefs than women. But anyway, yeah, that's my experience. I navigate the world as a Black, queer woman. It gives me strength to wake up each morning.
Yeah.
And maybe do something to help the generation that comes after me.
And so what are ways that people can understand intersectionality more, if this is something that's new to them, or to be more mindful of, you know, when they are understanding or learning more about people within their communities?
Yeah. And you know, just to answer you, and I'm not an expert on this,
yeah,
but navigating the world as a minority sort of enables you to want to fight,
yeah,
for the others, because you're used to your voice not being heard.
Yeah.
So I think intersectionality is really about understanding the injustices that different minority groups may face in the way that they navigate the world. And so,
and you can't talk about one without talking about
the other. Exactly.
Intersecting. They are just like the term,
right? Exactly. So, like, especially now for us that want to build queer communities, it is so important that we understand all these different intersectionalities that come together. Like, someone's spiritual identity, if someone is a Christian and they're heterosexual, it's going to be a very different experience for someone who's a Muslim and maybe they're queer.
Mm-hmm.
It's like all these are just as important in any community or any organization. Like, even if we are all queer, even if we are queer, you and I are queer, but I'm a Black woman and you are an Asian woman.
Mm-hmm.
So the way you experience the world or the way you experience life in America is probably different from the way I experience life in America, and would be very different from the way a white queer woman is experiencing mm-hmm. life in America. Yeah. And so for us, understanding this intersectionality helps us, one, be more inclusive,
mm-hmm.
and then give a voice to those that may not necessarily have a voice. And I feel like it's important for all of us to take time and understand intersectionalities wherever we are.
Yeah
It's big time.
Yeah.
Like, what about you? What's your intersectionality, or how, you know, what, how do you understand your own intersectionality as a QPOC?
Yeah, I think I definitely want to hold space more for the questions that I have for you.
Oh, right. But that's like, fine. No, I understand that.
Like, and we were just talking about this too before recording this, but I am a Vietnamese American woman. My parents emigrated here. So, you know, I think as like an Asian American child of immigrants, assimilation was always like a huge thing for us growing up, because we just didn't want any focus on us or any attention to us at all. And so I grew up always wanting to assimilate to anything. And something that I must like say is that for me, in the past couple years, I've just learned and unlearned so much about like anti-Blackness within the Asian communities.
Right.
You know?
That's a big deal, man.
It's huge.
That's big time.
And it's like, it's something that... Sorry, we just fist bumped.
Yeah, you can't see that, but we did.
But like, there's just so much to unpack there. And what, like me as an Asian American woman to have to reconcile with like my parents, you know, or like with my community, because there are a lot of things that I think anger me, but also understanding why it's making me angry. For me, yeah, unlearning and unpacking a lot, but knowing that I am a light-skinned Asian woman, queer woman now, understanding a lot of that, I think, has helped me in understanding where I take up space in my communities, different communities, and understanding where there's so much more I need to learn and like take action to be more inclusive.
That's deep.
So yeah, I think it's just like learning how I navigate in the world and understanding how I navigate in the world, and how like you navigate in the world, I think it makes me like, it makes us more empathetic,
right,
I think, with each other and with the people around us and with the communities that we want to build,
right,
or want to build deeper relationships with,
right.
And that has been, you know, it has just been such a joy to work with you and to learn more from you, because I am learning to listen more, you know. I think the world needs more listening.
100%.
Really. To learn to listen and to really understand different backgrounds and how people navigate and the importance of intersectionality.
Right.
I think that has made me feel more empathetic and be more proactive about being inclusive.
Right.
Yeah.
If you want to support Queerly, follow, rate, and leave a review on the podcast platform of your choice.
We would love to hear from you, so please reach out to us at hi.queerly@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram at Queerly Community. That's QUEERLYQMUNITY. Love y'all!